This morning by reviewing of just a little bit what I was trying to say yesterday. I should say also to start with that I practice these basic management principles in my own career and in my own business. And the only way possible for me to be here this morning is to get that work done through somebody else. And that means scanning the horizon to find people and taking the trouble to see to it that there's training available for those people, and then taking a chance and risking their minds as they apply their minds to our business. But as we have established goals, and I might say that to me, goals are something that's pretty dynamic. That means they are to be changed. Goals are not something that cast you in concrete. Some of you may be a little fearful of setting goals and setting objectives because it'll hem you in. Now, let me just give you one illustration about goal setting. My job is to peer into the future as far as our business is concerned. And so we have an expansion program, a 5-year program. You see, it's a matter of trying to predict, and we decided that we must scrap our expansion program because of the economic conditions around us. And we decided that we would do well this year to break even. And so I directed that we all tighten our belts and be as economical in every way as we possibly can. Stop all expansion. Now, my point is that because you have a plan, you're not stuck with it. And if conditions warrant a change in those plans, then the first thing, obviously, that we have to do is change them. But I just called the office since I've been here to get our statistics for March of this year, and my predictions were wrong again. We have had the biggest March in our history. I predicted the worst. Now, I did the best I could with the indicators that I had in hand. Now, you see, I don't need to crawl in a hole and hide my plan and conceal the fact that it did not turn out the way we predicted. Well, what is necessary is to lay it out and recognize that we missed it. Our plans are too small. We can do better. So, what do we have to do? When I get back, we have to revise our plan. My point is, you're not stuck with a plan. And if your plan is not working, or your objectives were too ambitious, or not ambitious enough, you can always change your plan. So these techniques that we are talking about are guidelines and very, very helpful. And I can be here because I have written job descriptions for the people that work for me. And you know, and I would like to suggest this to you, sir. I'm, as I say, the president of, a big enough company. But as the head of it, I must get my work done through other people. And so, in spite of the fact that we have these 300 people scattered around Michigan, I have only one person reporting to me. That's all, one. I make no daily operating decisions. None. Oh, I have to do with setting the policies. I have to do with setting the guidelines. I have to do with setting the objectives. But the day-by-day operation, I get done through other people. And this is one of the wonders of management. I have a building company. We have a big project going on right now. 178 apartments we're building. I have nothing to do with it on a day-to-day basis. I remember one time I was in a church, and here was this minister who was so under pressure. And he was telling me of the weight of being a minister, and we went into his study. And there were blueprints all over the place, and he said that they were building a church, and that he was responsible for building a church. I said, what do you know about building a church? And he said, like most of us, nothing. You mean you are in charge of building a church, and you don't know anything about churches? That's right. Well, how come you take on a job like that? Well, who else will do it? Well, that's a good question. Who else could? It seems like anybody else would be better off than you on this job. And that is the first question, isn't it? Who can do it? And I asked him, and do you know what I found out? I found out that he had a building contractor and an electrical contractor in his church. I said, how come they aren't in charge of this building program? You know why? Because he thought he wasn't sure he wanted to trust them. He had to call the shots. And so here's a building contractor and an electrical contractor watching the preacher struggle with the building. Does that make any sense? And I said, sir, if you pardon my suggestion, if I were you, I would start on the premise that you're one of the least knowledgeable people in the congregation about building churches, and therefore the least qualified. Now, one of the reasons why I can get apartment houses built is because I know that I don't know anything about it. And if I want to build some, I have to go to somebody and say, please, mister, I need some apartments and I don't know anything about it. That's what you ought to do. Please, mister, I need a new church and I don't know anything about it. I need help. Who can help me? Now that's thinking management. And I suggested to him, if I were you, I would try to persuade Mike, you know, if there's any other group in this church who don't know how to build churches, it's the congregation. So I sure wouldn't give the responsibility to the congregation. Oh, but he said, we are a democratic congregation. What does that mean? That means we vote on the color? You mean to tell me that you're going to have a business meeting and this congregation is going to vote on how to build a church? You got to be kidding. If I were you, sir, the first thing that I would do would be to prayerfully convince that congregation that they don't know nothing about building. And if I were you, I would pick the most knowledgeable committee out of this church that I could pick, and I would give them the power to build a building. And he looked at me unbelievingly. You've got to be kidding. Now, all I'm trying to say is that he ought to stick to something he knows about, which is preaching and teaching. Now, one of the reasons why I'm in the building business is because I know that I don't know anything about it. And it's important to know what you don't know and admit it. And I have some of the finest people building that project, the finest people that I could find. They know how to do it. Well, I went my way. After all, I was just there for Sunday morning. This minister was so tired, you see, that he brought me in to relieve him of his work while he was doing some work he didn't know how to do, which was build a building. I forgot all about it. And I ran into this fellow a couple of years later, and he came up to me and he said, "You remember the conversation we had in my study with all those blueprints around?" And he gave me a big hug. I'm not accustomed to hugging preachers. And he said, "Brother, I want to tell you, I took your advice, and this was one of the happiest experiences we ever had, that we turned the responsibility over to these men, and they just did a tremendous job, and we went about the job of running our church while they built the building." Now, you see, that is management. That is setting objectives, deciding what you want to do, find qualified people to do it, and go on with your work. That's getting your work done through other people. So I just want to say to you that these techniques that we're talking about are very basic and very, very important. And if there's one single thing that I see among the pastors that I consult with that causes them more difficulty and pressure and problems than anything else, is the fact that you would take on a job you don't know how to do. You can do a tremendous lot of things if you get people that know how to do it. I'm in a restaurant business, and I don't know anything about it. I really don't know anything about food. I've got people working for me that are a lot smarter than me, thankfully. We have a fellow that has a master's degree in food management. He's so much smarter than me. But you know, nobody in the company thinks he's the president. He just works there. But he's smart. And he's knowledgeable. And you see, management simply involves finding the sharpest, keenest, most qualified people in your organization to do what needs to be done. I was sitting on a platform one Sunday, and the ushers came forward. And this pastor leaned over to me and said, "You see that fellow walking down the aisle? He is the president of RCA Corporation." And he was so happy that he had the president of the RCA Corporation as an usher. And I leaned over and said, "What else does he do?" He said, "Oh, we don't ask him to do anything else. He's too busy and too important." And I thought, what a humiliating thing to do to a man that's president of RCA. Ask him to usher. I'd ask him to be chairman of the board. I'd ask him to run the church for me. President of RCA. Now, gentlemen, I want to challenge you to scan your audience and scan your church and put the people to work that are the most knowledgeable people you've got in the area of their expertise. And then you'll be free to function in the area of your expertise. And so I'm responsible for a rather vast business operation. But my expertise is in getting other people to do my work. Now, that's not laziness, you see. After all, you have to be able to defend the fact that you're doing something too. And I think my people are very happy to undergird me and to realize that together, along with running these businesses, we have an international ministry. So we do it together, and I hold up my end, and they hold up theirs. And I have to have time to dream. Like a few weeks ago, my wife and I and another couple, I needed some dreaming time. And I figured the best place I know of to dream would be to rent a sailboat in the Virgin Islands, which we did. Now, that may look like recreation, but I think a leader needs lots of time to think and to dream. And every once in a while, somebody calls me up and says, "What are you doing the week of May 14th? And I say, "Nothing." And they say, "Great. Would you come to my church?" And I say, "No, I scheduled nothing." You see, you have to schedule nothing if you're going to do nothing. Now, the only way, you see, that I can move you, and when I look across this audience, flat floor, ministers, what am I doing up here? And I know one thing. You came here this morning on the assumption that I had something to say. I don't believe that any of you would be very happy for me to explain how busy I've been in the last few weeks, and therefore I am unprepared this morning. And isn't that too bad? But you fellows understand. No, you assume, and you have a right to assume, that I have something to say. Now, the only way that is possible is if, preliminary to this, I had some dreaming time and some thinking time. Well, this is what the Apostle Paul was saying. I'm back to starting now. Yesterday I read you this verse, this tremendous thought, this tremendous spirit on the Apostle Paul. I long to see you. I can't wait for Sunday to come to share that I may impart unto you some spiritual gift. I can't think of anything any more strategic than anything more important than for you just chafing, waiting for Sunday to come to share some spiritual gift with these people that you love. Now, I didn't say that these people that you are disturbed over or disgusted with or mad at. But that you have in mind the establishment of your congregation. I long to see you that I may impart unto you some spiritual gift to the end that you may be established. That is, that I may be comforted together with you by the mutual faith of both you and me. What a wonderful thing to watch my staff grow. Grow in knowledge. Grow in experience. Grow in grace. And watch these things expand as we do it together. And a lot of our growth is on the shirt tails of some people who work for me who are smarter than me. And as they grow, I hang on, and as I grow with them, and they with me. Lots of administrative detail in running 6 restaurants. And it has to be done. But I don't have to do it. I have to see to it that it gets done. And so for a minister to look over his congregation, mind you now, I'm talking about a minister who knows he is an inspiration to his people. How do you do that? By having a message burning on your heart that you can't wait to share with them. That's one of the first ways of establishing rapport and confidence in you. And people wanting to help you scatter the message that is so helpful to them. So that means a history of success when it comes to moving the hearts of your people. Well, on this morning, I'd like to share with you an experience in the Scriptures, a management experience, an experience involving the leadership of men. And as we'll develop across the week, my colleagues and me will realize that leadership involves making up your mind what you want people to do. Telling them what their job is, telling them what constitutes satisfactory performance, checking to see that it's done, recognizing quality work, correcting poor work, getting rid of the ones who don't do it. That's management. Now, as I say, in my business, I have people who do all those things. And because I'm responsible for it, I repeat, does not mean that I do it. I have other people do it. Not so that I can loaf, because I have to be significantly busy also, and they need to know it. And I'd like to share with you the story of Samuel. Samuel chapter 15, and this has to do with his interaction with a king. Now, I guess there aren't very many preachers who rub elbows with kings. This would be the equivalent of the President of the United States, and there aren't very many preachers who interact with the President of the United States, but this fellow was dealing with a king. Now, you shouldn't have to follow up a king. Surely, if you give a king an assignment, you can forget it. But follow-up is so important. I guess one of the best illustrations of that occurred last year when we had a management seminar like this in Atlanta. And I went off one evening with Dr. Bright and the board of directors of Campus Crusade for Christ. Now, that's pretty challenging company. And we had a wonderful time. There's only one thing wrong with that. I forgot that I was the evening speaker at the management seminar that night. And I just didn't show up. Where was I? I was off with the board enjoying the evening. Now, I say that to say that, you see, that was somebody's fault who didn't follow me up. But you see, someone says, do I have to follow you up? You have to follow everybody up. Now, somebody learned from that experience, because I've got two people at this conference getting me there. And if you see me walking around with a real pretty young thing, lovely young lady, she's seeing to it that I don't get lost. Very simple principle. If you want something done, and it's your responsibility to get it done, you better follow up. It's not enough to assign a job. You got to follow up. Well, here is this fellow Samuel, and in the first verse it says, Samuel said unto Saul, the Lord sent me, the Lord sent me. Well, I guess I can take that for Saul to say that the Lord sent him. Or I can even accept the fact that the Apostle Paul would say that the Lord chose him. Well, what would you think if I said that the Lord sent me to talk to you this morning? You know, if that's true, do you suppose that could be true? Well, then you better listen. And I better be careful what I say. Do you suppose it makes sense for you to think that the Lord arranged for you to preach next Sunday morning? The Lord? Hear the word of the Lord? Now, I can buy that when it comes to Samuel and Paul, but how about you? Now, I don't know how you hear from the Lord. I have a lot of people. As a consultant to religious organizations, I run into problems where I sit down and there's a problem and somebody says, like in a mission, and there's a fixed amount of money. And here's this missionary who says the Lord told him to start a publishing activity. And then here's another fellow, and the Lord told him to use the same money to start a radio station. And so here I am talking to two people who claim the Lord gave them opposite directions for the same money. Now, something's funny. So I have to say, you know what the Lord told me? The Lord told me. And the only way I know of to figure out how the Lord speaks, I found in his handbook that you two fellows need to be like-minded. Now, there's something wrong with your directions. You see, you can throw these words around very easily, can't you? The Lord said it. I prayed about it. Well, that's the end of it, if you prayed about it. But I get into these problems where two people on opposite ends of a problem both claim they heard from God.